Welcome to Virtual School Assembly. I'm your host, Tyler Christensen. I'm a productivity speaker, author, and classroom teacher. Here at Virtual School Assembly, I interview Hollywood celebrities, professional athletes, Olympians, speakers, and educators who share messages of inspiration, education, and hope to better prepare you for an ever-changing and uncertain world. Thanks for joining us. Let's get started. Welcome back to Virtual School Assembly. Today, our guest is Rory Jennings. Rory grew up in a family of six in a small city in the south of England called Salisbury. He played a variety of sports throughout childhood, including soccer, cricket, tennis, sailing, and rugby. He found that he had a talent for rugby, so he decided to pursue that, and he ended up playing for England in different age groups, so the under 16, the under 18, under 20, as he was going through primary school and secondary school. He was lucky enough to be offered a professional contract with Bath Rugby straight from school at age 18. Now, Bath is in the Premier League in rugby, so that's a pretty big deal to go straight from high school to Bath. He played 6 years of professional rugby, has had a lot of up and downs during that time, and we'll get into some of those today. Right now, he's playing for Coventry RFC in the Championship League with the ambition to push back up into that Premier League once again. Rory, thanks for being here this morning.
No worries, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So, we haven't had a lot of rugby players on the show yet. So, for the American audience, just take us through rugby really quickly. Give us a few of the differences between American football or soccer and rugby. What are the big differences?
Right. So, rugby is a game of 15 players on each side with 8 substitutes. Essentially, it's the same shaped ball as American football, a few of the simple rules, you have to pass backwards, so it's very different to American football like that. The contact's pretty similar, so you get some big collisions, you get some big people. I'm one of the smallest for sure. It's more fluid than American football. There's a lot of stop-start in American football compared to rugby, where it's just 80 minutes, sort of pretty much non-stop. In football, obviously, you can only use your feet. In rugby, you can obviously use your hands and your feet. So, sort of in a nutshell, that's a pretty simplistic view of it. But it's more similar to American football than soccer, sure.
Yeah, and it's funny talking to an American audience because obviously worldwide rugby is a huge sport. It's very popular throughout most of the world. It just hasn't been as big in the United States. And so that's why I need to kind of put that clarifying bit at the beginning. But huge sport worldwide. It's a big deal to play professional rugby. And so excited to dig into your story. Let's go back in time to kind of your childhood. Explain a little bit what it was like growing up in Salisbury and being from a big family and playing sports. Give us paint a picture for us.
Yeah, so my dad is in the military, or was in the military. So the early years were a bit of moving around, but then we settled in Salisbury. I was pretty young at the time. Played a bunch of sports in the backyard with my older brother. Cricket, which I don't think you play in the US. It's just similar to baseball, I guess. loads of different sports, soccer, rugby. So just sort of having a normal childhood, really, playing loads of sports. Played more rugby than anything else as I grew up. Went to school in the local area, sort of excelled a bit in my rugby. Found that I actually really had a passion for it and enjoyed it, and maybe thought that I could do it as a profession, which is I sort of pursued it and luckily enough, I know you said in the bio, but yeah, it's pretty much the same. I got a contract at 18, but from there on in, it's just been professional rugby.
So when you say you decided to pursue it as a profession, how young were you when you kind of had that idea that I'm good enough at this, that this could actually happen, that I could pursue this?
I guess it's, you don't really know until you get the contract that you're going to get it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I guess you have that burning desire. If you've got a massive passion for it, you just work towards it, and no one's going to tell you that you can't do it, I guess. And then I guess when you get to 13, 14, you start going to different sort of different teams, regional teams and stuff like that. So you have a good idea that you're sort of one of the best at your age group in this certain area. And then it sort of snowballs into maybe a national team or whatever. So you've got a pretty good idea that you're in a good position to make it pro.
Right.
Yeah.
So before you signed that pro contract, let's just talk about like from 14 to 18 as you're developing as a rugby player. Now you said you're a little on the small side for rugby. I know you're number 10. In rugby, your number is your position. And so explain kind of what your role on the team was, and have you always been a 10, or have you kind of bounced around a bit?
Yeah, so I pretty much, which is uncommon actually. A lot of players change as they grow and sort of or whatever fill out. But number 10 is essentially, if I can put it in American football terms, it's basically the quarterback sort of. So it's the person that sort of calls the plays, and sort of dictates what the team's doing and where they're going to go and stuff like that. So not. I'm not the only person that does that, but it's sort of the main person who does it. So that's my sort of role. I'm also the kicker, which is obviously two separate roles in American football, and you can combine them in, or anyone can kick, but I'm the main kicker as a
Right.
number 10. Yeah.
Cool. And that's been the case since you were younger. You've always been kind of a kicker.
Well, from the youngest, when you just start playing rugby, you're not, the rules are you're not allowed to kick until you get
Oh,
to a
okay.
certain age. And it's the same with contacts. You can't do contacts until a certain age. I'm not sure if it's the same over there, but yeah, pretty much since I was allowed, I was pretty much kicking. So it sort of came naturally somehow. I think my dad played a bit of soccer, so maybe it came a bit more naturally.
Cool. Well, so let's talk about that first contract. When it was offered to you, were you expecting a contract? Were there other teams interested? How do you go about landing that first big contract to play professionally?
At the time, so 6 years ago, it was pretty much done regionally. So whatever, if you were in the catchment area for a team, you if you were going to get a contract, you get it from that professional team. So where I lived, it was Bath Rugby. So if I was going to get it from somewhere, it was going to be there most likely. And I guess, like I said, you kind of get a good idea. As you do more regional stuff, the teams sort of attach onto you, and you do a bit of training as you go 16, 17, 18. You can sort of get a good idea that you might get one, but you never know.
Right.
So it's always on the edge. But yeah, and then it came, I think it was, yeah, it was just maybe my last term of school when I was 18. So that was a massive relief, and yeah, it was a great honor.
And how do they do that? Do they just they call you up on the phone and say, "Hey, we want to offer you a contract," or is there a like, in American football, we make a big display of the draft and everybody wears the hats and stuff like that. What's it like in rugby?
It's absolutely nothing like that, I can tell you. Yeah. I mean, I imagine the honor is still exactly the same, but it's not put on the same spectacle as the draft system or anything like that. I literally got pulled aside by the academy manager at the time, and he pulled me and my dad, actually, I think, to a side and said, "Yeah, you're getting offered a contract." So it was a bit more private and
Right.
maybe subdued, but it was still great.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's talk about, so you've been playing for about 6 years now, which I would imagine is about the length of, or probably longer than what most people play professionally. So you're a veteran, you've been at it for a while. Go through some of the highs and the lows of being a professional rugby player.
Well, I guess injuries, to start with a low point. Injuries are always a low point in sport, and a lot of people can probably sympathize with that. Injuries and then contract negotiation time, whether you're going to get one or not, that's a massively worrying time. The highs, obviously, winning games, winning trophies, personal success, personal recognition. But mainly the team camaraderie and sort of being within the team and team culture, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the definite high points. I think there's definitely more high points than low points, being in professional sport. But There are definitely some low points you need to keep an eye out for.
Right. Now, we've had a lot of professional athletes on this show from different sports. We've had soccer players, we've had football players, baseball, basketball, and a lot of them have been at it for a while. They talk about some of the low points that you just mentioned, contract negotiations, not knowing if you'll be on a team next year, if you're going to get traded, or if you have to negotiate with a different team. I know you were with Bath for a while, but you're not with them now. What happened there, and what was that like going from Bath to Coventry, where you are now?
So, coming straight from school, went to Bath Rugby, which is, like you said, the top league, with a bunch of international players, some of the best players in the game, sort of starstruck. Great to learn from them, just training next to them day in, day out. But I guess I was guilty of, not, I didn't realize at the time, but I was guilty of sort of, as I made it
right
to Bath Rugby from school to professional, I sort of sat on my laurels a little bit. I can admit that. It's not that I didn't work hard, I just didn't work hard enough to compete with some of the best players in the world at the time. So I just found myself not cutting the grade after my fourth year. They said, we're not, you're surplus to requirements. And then, yeah, I had to drop down a league, which was humbling and sort of gave me a bit of a time to reflect and sort of realise where I'd gone wrong.
Right. Now, kids don't understand what it means to compete at that high of a level because, you know, as we go through primary school and then into high school, even the top athletes, they're not playing professionally. And so they don't know the grind of that being your job, of that's what you're doing. Can you take us through kind of what a day of training looks like? Not right now, because obviously things have changed where you're not with the team. But when you're in a normal season and training, what does a day of training look like for you?
So normally, depends what club you're at. But for me at the moment, when I was back at the club, I'd be in for the club at 7 a.m. You do your questionnaire testing sort of thing. So your sleep out of 10, your stiffness, your injury, your different flexibility, all those different questions, your weight, blah, blah, blah. And then you'd sometimes have, you'd go for breakfast, quick breakfast, and then you'd be split into two teams, two different groups, and one would do weights whilst the other one would do skills. So work on your micro skills without going too hard. And the other would do some weights, whatever session that was planned. And then you'd have a break, some meetings. You might have a unit session. So for us in rugby, it's backs and forwards. So you'd have, I guess, offense, defense, special teams in American football. Backs essentially, well, considered the smaller blokes, and the forwards are the larger blokes. So, yeah, we'd do a unit session, so work on specific unit skills, and then after that session, it would be half an hour or so, and then go to lunch, and then we have a main session after lunch, which would be the whole team together, and it would change sort of day to day what you do. When you get closer to the game, you do less volume training. So you're obviously a bit fresher for the game. And that's sort of, that's a normal day, but it would vary here and there depending on what they planned.
Right. So one of the big difference I think between amateur sports and going to the professional level is kind of the intensity of the training. I know growing up, I spent very little time in the weight room. I mostly just played the sports, right? And so you're out just practicing the skills and doing the things. But then as you get to a more professional level, a lot of those other things, I mean, even doing like a questionnaire every day, that would never occur to me that, oh yeah, they keep track of everything and they're doing that. Yeah. Was that a hard transition for you, or was it just, you know, that's what people do?
Yeah, I guess it's a bit, at the start, it was a bit different. So you'd probably accidentally miss a few questionnaires every now and then, and you get told off by whoever is checking it. But then you just get used to it. It's just part of day-to-day life. I realise that it's important to those who measure the data. It it's important sort of information. It's a bit annoying in the 7 a.m. in the morning when you've still got dust in your eyes, and yeah, but it is, it's one of those things about professional sport. It's every sort of every inch counts.
Well, so it's interesting to see kind of a day in the life of a professional athlete. What about the off season? How much training are you doing in the off season, and what kind of things are you doing so that when the season comes back around, you're ready for it?
So on a normal off season, it'll be about 5 weeks, and then we'll go back into our preseason. But my off season normally looks like the first 2 weeks is just cut everything out. Just go on holiday. Mm-hmm. Don't even think about it. Sort of because you've had, well, our seasons are quite long, so they're about 9 months, 10 months.
Wow, yeah, that's really.
So good. And then preseason's 2 months, and then you get 1 month break basically ish. So you kind of give yourself that time to just switch off completely, not even look at a clip of the sport. Right. That's what I do anyway. And then the second 2 or 3 weeks is mainly based on gradually getting back into it, the training. And then when you hit that end of that last week, you're sort of ready to hit the ground running with preseason.
That's cool. So as a professional athlete, what is kind of some of your favorite things about being a professional athlete? Like, is it everything you dreamed it would be when you were a kid? What are the things that you really love about being a pro rugby player?
I guess I wouldn't say it's everything I'd expected, because I haven't necessarily hit the heights that I've wanted to.
Right.
But in terms of, I mean, there's so many enjoyable things about it. I love being part of a team, really. Mm-hmm. Sort of 40, 45 blokes from different backgrounds and just sort of mucking in together for sort of a goal. Spending most of the day with each other, which is good fun. I love that aspect of it. I love sort of winning games like everyone does. But there's so many different aspects to it, and I wouldn't say that it's necessarily what it's been pictured in my mind to be. But that might be a good thing as well. I mean, it's not all fairy tales in the world, is it?
Right. So do you feel like a celebrity, like everywhere you go, people are like, there goes Rory, or are you a normal guy that just plays rugby for a living?
Definitely the latter, yeah. I'm just a normal bloke who happens to be playing rugby for a living. I guess as you go up the levels, it's playing internationally, right at the top, it's a different story. But for me, it's just a normal bloke, to be fair.
Right. Well, you're not normal, but you might feel that way. For the kids that are dreaming of being a professional athlete one day, what kind of advice would you give them? How can you go from just being a kid that's playing for fun to getting to that professional level? What do they need?
I think it's important whilst you're still young to keep playing those different sports. I think that's really important, for not just for enjoyment, but for a skill level. You just develop loads of different skills playing different sports. And I think that once you get if you find a talent for something, you can go into specializing into that. But I wouldn't personally go too early, otherwise you might lose love of the game. Right. I've seen it in other people before. And then once you get it, it's just planning, sticking to your small goals, regular goals, and achieving and reflecting on what might have not gone well, and just keep learning and keep working hard. I mean, it's quite cliche and generic, but it's a winning formula, I guess, for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely is. And even so, you're even several years into your professional career. What are some of your goals moving forward? And what about life after rugby? Do you have any plans for that too?
So my goals moving forward, my like broad goals are to get back into the Premiership, Premier League, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's an immediate goal. I'm desperate to sort of play at the highest level again. And then after rugby, it's something that I need to plan more for. I'm interested in a number of different things. I love my as a hobby, I love my music, but that's not after rugby. It's sort of, I'm looking at sort of property and things like that. I mean, it's still a still something I'm need to narrow down my focus, but there's a few things that I'm getting stuck into that will hopefully help me after rugby.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing your journey with us today and for educating us Americans about what rugby is. If kids want to follow you like on social media or something like that, is there a platform that you're on very frequently?
I guess Twitter and Instagram are my two favored social media things. I'll have to find my handles, but
I think you've sent them to me, so we'll link them up in the description. We'll be good to go.
Friday.
Cool. Okay, well, thanks for joining us this morning. Well, morning for us, afternoon for you. Thanks for being here, Rory.
No worries. Cheers. Thanks, Ed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us today on Virtual School Assembly. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else you listen to virtual assemblies. And leave us a rating and review so we know what you learned and took away from this virtual assembly. Videos and show notes are found at virtualschoolassembly.com. And if you're a school leader and you're looking for a speaker for virtual or traditional in-school assemblies, or if you're looking for some teacher training, I'd love to connect with you to see how I can help. You can check out my website at tylerchristensen.com. Thanks, you are super duper. Let's go out and make the world a better place. Bye-bye.